How long have you been in the Navy?
Oh, me blooming life.
I'm Jamie Britt.
And I'm Heath Britt.
And together we are E14. We have 40 years of naval service.
And each week we discuss a potpourri of topics, which we like to call smoke pit topics.
These are real world topics that concern us, our marriage, and our Navy with a sailor twist.
So join us each week as we dive into the deep end.
Booyah! Hey everyone, welcome back to E14 Podcast. I'm Jamie Britt.
And I'm Heath Britt.
And together we are E14. To put our disclaimer on the record, the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of our own and not the United States Navy or my command.
Hey everybody, welcome back to this podcast, E14. We got with us today Greg Heiler.
In studio. This is a big deal.
Yeah, we never have anybody in studio. He actually...
We had Shu in our studio before we had all of this recording equipment, so it didn't sound as good.
It's hard to you have to concentrate on the Shu.
I had two mics, not three mics, and it was a whole different ball game back then. We were noobs
before y'all were big time, like y'all now.
Before such noobs.
Before we were big, now we're like statewide.
Yeah, I like it.
Well. Greg is a retired Navy man like myself. Actually, I was at his retirement ceremony. I recited.
You were in it.
I was. I did the watch.
Oh.
Ding.
Did he tell you what he likes to do when he is part of the ceremony? Tears and panties drop.
Tears and panties always drop when I'm.
My panties drop for sure.
Did they?
It was great.
It was less of a retirement, more of a roast.
It was great. I mean, you had the perfect guest speaker in John Overly, Master Chief John Overly. You had the perfect guy reading the watch, me.
Yeah.
And your speech was phenomenal. I must have heard you had a brain injury like 100 times in that speech, but it was part of the charm.
And Shu was the MC.
And Shu was the MC. He was great. Yeah. So it was like all these great people all came together for this retirement ceremony. It was perfect. Yeah.
I've known Eric since 2004. When I was still at CBI and visited the command, I met Eric. And there's a few of us that we've stayed in contact for almost 20 years. It's crazy.
It's crazy. Luckily, you're in one of those rates, kind of like NC, where y'all can cross paths a lot because there's not a lot of
small
rate.
Yep.
And there's only so many places.
Under 1,000 of us total. Yeah.
And there's only a few commands you can go to. Yeah. So real quick, Greg's a SWIC. Please
introduce yourself.
Yeah. Give us the nickel tour, son.
Hi, everybody. Greg Heiler, 22 years, 4 days in the United States Navy. A vast majority of that as a SWIC, like you said before that, I was a CB over in Gulfport. I'm a construction mechanic, and then got to 22, decided I really liked it. And I was like, I could do this. Went to Iraq for the first deployment, came back, went to SWIC school, came back, and then they couldn't get rid of me until they tried. So
definitely. What's a SWIC?
So Special Warfare Combatant Craft Crewman, the primary insert and extract platform for SOF, specifically where I was at Special Boat Team 22 was the riverine side of it. So working on the specialized craft for the riverine environment. So
y'all are in Navy Special Warfare. There's a reason why you wanted to wait until you were retired, right?
Yeah, of course. We don't want to be, putting a whole bunch of stuff out there when we're still active. So Schumann's retired. I'm retired. Heath's retired. So that we can talk about the things that we have, but, names have all been changed to protect the guilty.
Jamie's not retired. So stand by, Jamie.
Yeah. I just don't say anything about my service. No, I'm just joking.
No, you said Heath, but I just like throw her Jamie. She's still.
Yeah, I'm still here.
How long have you been?
Well, crazy thing. I was reserve, so I have almost 17 years in. Mm-hmm. But when you go back active duty, none of that time counts. So I think I have like 9 years.
That's gross. I didn't realize how much I'd like being retired until I was.
Yeah.
I tell everybody for the first time in my life, I'm the master of my own time. Get up when I want, do what I want. I wake up every morning, say hi to the dog, get a cup of coffee, go watch the birds in the backyard. It's awesome. And I'm a dirty college student. So I'm just doing my college thing and hanging out with,
Is it like a requirement that you grow a beard when you retire?
No, I just watched a whole bunch of movies with the quintessential operator and just like, oh, I'm just going to grow a beard. Honestly, I've never been allowed to. So yeah. I was like, let me try it.
I mean, I'm probably going to grow one.
I would. Mine comes in super like
white trashy.
Oh, yeah. White.
How'd you get it to come in all naturally white trashy?
Because I'm naturally white trashy. But it's all, you probably can't see it on the camera, but it's like I have brown hair. And it's like gray and red, and it's like calico. Like all of a sudden, my beard came in like four different colors.
You're like brindle.
Yeah, exactly.
Brindle is beautiful. Yeah.
Thank you.
I like it. I like the white trash. It's like if Joe Dirt took his hair and put it on his chin.
That's a great.
It's perfect.
I could braid it like I do my back hair. Awesome.
So, let's get into it, man. So you had a very weird childhood, man.
Thanks, Heath.
No, you did. It was weird and a little crazy. You
should write a book.
Yeah, right.
You should. So you're born in 1980. Where were you born at, man? Tell me a little bit about your childhood.
So I was born in Southern California, a small little beach city called San Clemente. Lived there for a few years. My younger brother was born. We're exactly a year and 11 months apart. So I was October 9th. He was September 9th. First day home, he came home from the hospital. Apparently, I threw a wiffle ball at his head, like day one, week one.
Nice big brother.
Yeah, well, yeah, I didn't know what this screaming bag was. Like, it was a screaming bag of meat, you know? We moved from there to Oceanside. My parents divorced at some point, maybe in 88, 89. We moved to Vegas with my mom. We were talking prior to the podcast. So on my 10th birthday, my mom was like, here's $20. Take your friends, go to Wendy's. So we walked across this little, the desert. It was this little like parking lot, basically. And we're eating Wendy's. We came back. And as we're going into my apartment, some guy was carrying groceries upstairs to his apartment. Like, looked at him, went in our house. 15 minutes later, cops knock on the door and say, hey, you guys are begging for food? It's like, no, we just came from Wendy's, man. Like, no, I'm 10, you know? So
yeah.
They came in the house, and my mom and my stepdad were out at like the casino. I mean, it's Vegas. So
yeah,
they were doing their thing. There was no food in the house.
Mm.
And my mom, you know, didn't do like that I know of, like heavy drugs or anything, but there was like drug paraphernalia for like weed and stuff in the house. They saw that and like, you guys are coming with us. So I kicked the cop, took off running, realized my brother was with him. Cop stopped me. We get thrown in, go to an orphanage. I don't remember if you ask me, we were there on a weekend. If you ask my brother, we were there almost a month. So kind of that, like when you're young, your brain doesn't I don't know how long I was there. My grandmother came and got us. Oh, excuse me. Took us back to where my dad was living in Los Angeles. I lived with him from 90 until I joined the Navy at 90. December 27th, 1999 is when I left for boot camp. February something is when I depped in. So
how did that recruiting go for you?
So all me blooming life, actually. My father, so both grandfathers were in the Navy. I found out after my maternal grandfather died that he was a CB, which is super crazy. I never knew that. Yeah. And my grandfather on my dad's side was a gunner's mate with, he was on like the USS Shangri-La, and apparently it had something to do with the bomb back in the day and all that. But they were always saying like, go join the Navy, earn some respect. Cause I was like breaking into cars and, you know, doing hood rat stuff when I was 19.
Were you pretty good at it?
I mean, I played Frogger across the 405 freeway and the cops didn't catch me.
I mean,
so
he didn't get caught.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not on my criminal record. So we'll go with I guess.
So how fast would it take you to get a car hot wire, whatever you did?
So I didn't do a lot of taking the entire car. I did that a couple of times. It was more of like, you know, kind of what they're doing now in California, everywhere, not getting in trouble, which is like smash and grabs.
But
you just test car doors, and a lot of them were unlocked. And especially back in the day, with, you know, electric locks wasn't a big thing.
Suckers.
Suckers.
No, it was lucrative. Yeah.
What's your biggest score? What'd you get?
Yeah, statute of limitations is gone by now, I'm sure. But we would have a guy that'd be like, hey, I need a green 92, 95 Honda Civic, or they give us the car they need to fix the car that's in the shop. And instead of buying the parts from the vendor, they would just steal one, take all the parts they needed and leave it somewhere. So guy needed a green 92, 95 Honda Civic. And we got that. I think I got like $1,000 or something. Back then I was like, oh, I'm fucking rich. You know,
that's a lot of money back then to a kid.
But that's it. I mean, nothing crazy. Hmm. But my dad was always saying like, you know, join the Navy and learn some respect, because I was a little jackass like most of us were. So I took my girlfriend at the time, who I had proposed to, and then she got pregnant. And my son was not born yet, but she was pregnant, and it was raining in LA. It was like one of the 3 days a year it rains in LA. And we're standing outside the recruiting office, and the Navy recruiter, you know, how they used to have like the four doors.
Choose your poison.
Exactly. And I was waiting for the Marines, and it's raining outside, and the Navy guy comes in. He's like, hey man, I'm not going to, you know, try to get you to join, just come inside with your girlfriend. She's pregnant. Like, you're out in the rain. Like, come on. And I'm sitting there listening to him talk to this kid who's going to join the Navy. I'm like, this doesn't sound bad, you know, whatever. And then, the Marine guy never showed up. I guess he just didn't come back that day, but the Army guy walked by the way it was laid out was there was four offices, but one hallway in the back. Mm-hmm. So you see the Army guy walk by and the Navy dude goes, well, there's your dude if you want to go talk to him. All right. So I go into this guy's office and I'm like, hey, how's it going? My name's Greg. And, you know, I'm trying to join the Army. And he's like, well, what do you want to do? And I was like, I want to do special forces. He's like, oh, I got a brochure about that. He looks for a pamphlet. It looks like, you know, 30 seconds. He's like, oh, I can't find it. What else do you want to do? All right.
Due to lack of pamphlets.
Yeah. Right. Well, then he had a, I don't know if you guys remember back in the day, the Army had this thing where like they wore like a motorcycle helmet and it was like the new Navy or the new Army.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
I saw that. And I was like, oh, I'll do that. Like, what's that all about? Oh, I got a pamphlet on that. Hold on a second. Couldn't find it. He's like, well, I can't find it. What else do you want to do? I was like, get the fuck out of your office, man. Like, you suck. Like, you suck at your job. So I turn around and I walk back into the Navy and I was like, look, man, I'm not getting on a ship. Other than that, I'll join the Navy. Like, let's figure it out. He's like, well, there's this test. You got to take a test, figure it out, you know, the ASVAB and shit. And he takes me down to MAPS. We're taking the test. And back then it was like a self-paced computer thing where like you have 50 minutes or whatever. Yeah. And the one thing that I remember is it's a 4-hour test. Mm-hmm. And I was done in like 46 minutes. I come strolling out, bebopping along. Cause I didn't know, like, I'm a fast test taker. I always have been. And my recruiter's fucking livid. Like, you're about taking this seriously. We came all the way down to downtown LA, blah, blah, blah. And I got like a 63, which isn't horrible.
It's pretty good score.
Yeah, it's good.
But I remember one of the things was there was four numbers and you had to find the four numbers. Yeah. And it's like, this typically takes an hour. And I was done in like 6 minutes. It's like, clack, 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 clack. So he's like, well, you qualify for whatever you want. I'm like, cool. And he's like, you want to go nuke? And I was like, no. He's like, why not? And I go, I don't want to glow in the dark.
That's kind of me. See, no,
that's not exactly what this guy said.
I said, I didn't want to grow a third arm.
Living, you know, just for the listeners out there, we could all be living in like mansions, but
exactly.
These guys,
I didn't want to grow a third eye. I mean, and forgive me for not wanting to have a third eye.
The other recruiter looked at me and went, that's a valid point. And like, but then he handed me this book back in the day that they had was all the rates. And I'm like, look through, and I'm kind of like, he can see, knowing what I know now, he can see I'm over this. Like, I'm not looking through 6,000 pages of what those people do.
Right.
Yeah. And he goes, what about a CB? And I was like, what the fuck is that? Right. And he goes, well, it's like a Marine, but with a wrench. Cool. Let's go. And literally I became a CM that day because that's what he said. And my dad was always working on cars. And so I had a little bit of mechanical.
Right.
You know, you could steal the best of them. So,
real quick about your dad. So you spent time with your grandma. So you still saw your parents?
No. So she came and got us, but then she took us to my dad's apartment. We lived with my dad from 90 until when I left in 99.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Cool. And so I joined as a CB, went to boot camp.
Well, just, you know, going back to that Navy recruiter telling you come in. Yeah, that's what we do. Well, so
He also, I wasn't going. So December 27th, 99, I was not leaving. I changed my mind. I was like, yeah, I'm not going. And he did the whole like, well, you have to go because you signed the paperwork.
Oh, well, that bullshit.
And he goes, well, yeah, no, he got me. And he goes, what'll happen is you'll go to boot camp. It'll have the moment of truth. And at the moment of truth, you can go, I'm not supposed to be here. I'm gonna go home. And they'll let you come back. And I'm apparently an idiot. And I was like, oh, okay. You know? So I fly to boot camp and that did not happen. And I'm sitting there. I'm like, hey, I'm not supposed to be here. Can I get a home? And it was like the blizzard of 99. If you look it up, it was like one of the worst storms in Chicago. It was miserable. And it was like snow's coming sideways when I get off the bus. I was not having it, right?
Whoa.
And they brought me to the CMC of Great Lakes. And he's looking at my record. He's like, what happened? I go, look, Kenneth Hill. I think he was an MC2. Kenneth Hill was my recruiter. Here's his card. This guy said I could come here, tell him I want to go home. Y'all would send me home. And he called him right then and there. And screamed at this dude. And knowing what I know now, that was fucking terrifying. But as a 19-year-old kid, I'm like, yeah,
get his ass.
Yeah, fuck him, you know? And then he hangs up the phone and he's holding my division record, which is like six pieces of paper at this point. And I go, all right, so, you know, what happens now? And he throws my folder at me. He goes, well, you're fucking here. Like, yeah. And he's like, so you're staying. I was like, what? And for halfway through boot camp, you know, you heard I don't know how it is now, boot camp, but you hear the like, chunk, 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 when the lights come on.
Mm-hmm.
Every time that went on, I would open my eyes and go, I want to go home. Until mm-hmm. Halfway through, I found out like, Jamie's getting promoted to E2. I'm like, what? You can get more money out of this? Like for listening? Because I didn't do fuck all in boot camp. Like, hey, do that. No, I'm not doing that. Hey, go here. No. And I found this out later, was my chief of my RDCs saw like, nah, let's give this kid a chance. Like, keep pushing, not let's roll him back because then he's gonna quit and go home.
Right.
Yeah.
But I started listening when I found out I could get promoted. I didn't, but I'm like, cool, I can get more money. And then my A school was in LA, which was a nightmare.
Hats off, MC2.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Thank you. Thanks for changing the course of my life, you know, by lying.
And he took a badass ass chewing by a Master Chief. Good for you, dude.
Yeah. I mean, all the while he was probably thinking, oh.
Yeah, I'm sure he's like, I still got my quota, whatever, nerd.
Yeah. I'll take an ass.
All I got to do is get you there. Yeah.
So joined as a CM, which is a construction mechanic.
Construction mechanic. Yep.
All right. Where'd you do your A school was in LA?
A school was at Port Hueneme, which is like an hour north of.
Yep.
I was an hour from home.
Which, oh, wow.
For any of you out there who decide to join any military branch, when you join the military and they go, hey, where do you want to take orders? Don't go home. Like, don't go home. It's the worst thing you could possibly do.
Why? Why is that?
Because you're around. I was stealing cars. So now it's like, oh, hey, you're back. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? I am back. And like, do I want to start doing like falling with the same idiots I was falling in with? I go home now to LA and there's still the same dudes working at Whole Foods. Like, you're 40, bro. Like, what happened? You were supposed to be, you know, whatever. Yeah. And they just, you know, the guys I was hanging around with weren't making the best choices for themselves and still aren't. So.
So did you go back to stealing cars while you were?
No, I didn't.
I was one. That's the question.
Yeah, well, yeah.
No, I did not. But they gave us a chance or the wish list in A school. Yeah. Like, do you want to go to stay here or do you want to go to Gulfport, Mississippi? And I'm like, well, Mississippi? No, thank you. I'm not doing that. And I did my dream sheet of 3 battalions in California and 1 in Mississippi. Obviously, they sent me to NMCD1 in Gulfport. And obviously, it's the best thing they could have possibly done. But at 19, you don't understand that.
Yeah. Like, who wants to go to Mississippi? It's hot. It's swampy.
Oh, it's awesome, though.
Yeah. It's great.
I'm looking out your window. Look at all the green. Like, we didn't have that in California. There's this wildlife. Like, I see squirrels and shit. Like, we didn't have that.
Now, let's put it in perspective. Here in Louisiana, the squirrels are stressed out because they're about to get eaten. But in other states, like Mississippi, they're like really flourishing.
No, they eat them in Mississippi, too.
Oh, they do?
Oh, yeah. We're just...
I've eaten squirrels, too.
Yeah, yeah. That's good eating.
They're good, in Mississippi, actually. Yeah.
So you went to
NMCD1, Naval Construction Battalion.
I always get that acronym.
Naval Mobile Construction Battalion.
Right. So I remember talking to you, man. You were like Super Saiyan there for a little while. You were like Rudy from the movie.
So I had a good run as a CB. My first deployment was to Guam in 2001. And there's different shops, right? You have the heavy shop for the bulldozers. You have the light shop for trucks. And you have the 5,000 shop for like forklifts and stuff like that. And the new guy, they're like, hey, what do you want to do? Like, you're going to 5,000 shop. And then we had so many problems in other parts of the battalion. Everybody got taken. It was just me. I'm an E1 running a shop of just me. It was me by myself trying to figure it out. And over the course of my career, you know, from E1 to E4, and I missed E5 by like 0.2 points.
I mean, it's a tough rate to make rank in.
It still is. No doubt.
For years. It's a small community.
It is very small. And then I did my own cap package. I just wrote it up. And it passed, and I made E5. And then, yeah.
But let's reverse. Let's go back a little bit to E2. One of the head Master Chiefs in your rate in the CB land came to your command.
What did you tell that dude?
That's great. This is great.
I didn't know you knew that story.
Oh, you told me.
So back in the in Guam, remember, this is pre-9/11. I was in Guam for 9/11, right? So right before that, I don't even think he exists anymore. It was the Master Chief Petty Officer of the CBs, right? They're like, oh, McPasta's coming. McPasta, E1, man, I don't know shit about fuck. So I'm like, yeah, okay, cool, whatever. I have work to do. So I'm sitting there in my coveralls. And one of the biggest things we had problems with were the batteries on vehicles fall out. So I would take rebar and I would bend it with a blowtorch and I would just make a new one. So I'm in the HT shop, which is where I found out what an HT punch was. We told you about
Good times.
But I'm sitting there with a blowtorch. I'm kind of doing my thing and I have a Camelback on. And all of a sudden there's like 12 people surrounding. You know, you get that feeling like people are looking. And I kind of like just raise the hood and I'm like, hi. And there's this old dude standing there. He's like, hey, son, what's in that Camelback, coolant or water? I know what the answer he wants, right? And I'm like, oh, coolant, that's chief. He's like, oh, yeah. He walks away. And I look over the HT and I just like shake my head, put my hood back on. Like, yeah, it's a dog and pony, man. Beat it, nerds.
Yeah.
So I go back out in the shop and I'm putting that bracket on him underneath like a welder or something. And all of a sudden, there's again like 10 pairs of boots. Fuck, man. So I slide out and I'm like, hey, what's up? And they're like, hey, come here, Seth. Or come here, CB. Yeah, cool. And I get up and this Master Chief Petty Officer CB's is like, I hear you're doing great work. You're out here by yourself, blah, 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 blah. And he goes to shake my hand. He gives me a coin. And I don't know what a coin is. That's why I'm looking. I'm like, cool, you know, thanks. And he goes to walk away and he turns back and he goes, I don't get to give that out often. And I get it. Like, they want to give coins to everybody, but they can't. He's like, I don't get to give that coin out often. And I look at him and I go, that's all right, Master Chief. When I take your job, I'll give it out. And all 11 people with him are like, oh, like, what the fuck is wrong with you? And apparently I have this problem with talking, like, and just like basically disrespecting people, but not realizing I'm doing it. I'm
the
just
vomit like of cocky. Words.
Yeah. So I was like, I'll do it when I take your job. And he turns and looks at me and he goes, well, advancement's right around the corner, CB. And he walks away. So I got the Master Chief Petty Officer CB coin. And I apparently, you know,
punked him.
But yeah. All right. That's the words we want to use.
This kid.
Yeah. So that was, I didn't know you knew that. Yeah.
Oh, you told me that story.
I had a brain injury, so I don't remember a lot.
That's true. As I heard 30 times in your timer speech.
Yeah.
But are we going to get into the brain injury?
We'll get into that in a minute.
Yeah.
There's still so much more to go.
I know.
The legacy of Greg Hyland.
I'm here whenever, you know, so y'all kick me out. So,
okay, let's fast forward. So you were, see, the thing about NSW with the SWIX, we'll go with SWIX for what I know of. They get these other rates to help support them.
Yes.
So CB is a huge rate that supports with their maintenance, their boat upkeep, and a lot of things CBs do. And that's what you did at 22, right?
Yeah. So, so when I was
Greg's getting a refill.
Yeah. Sorry. I keep remembering
what are you drinking
that
there, Greg?
Bullet bourbon, mostly bourbon, almost all the time. yeah. I forgot I was on camera too. And I, you know, so when I was in Guam, they had the like third time I was in Guam, because it's all only place I ever deployed almost as a CB.
Tough
but,
life.
Yeah, no, it's a beautiful island. I actually took orders there just because I love it so much. But this guy shows up and they're like, hey, anybody who wants to go to the development group, go and meet everybody in the high bay. And I'm like, I don't know what the fuck that is. And I get told that, you know, when you have that junior sailor who's shit hot, you're like, hey, I'll go there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I got told, hey, just go. Right. All right. So I'm sitting in the back of this bay. I don't really care what's going on. And this guy's briefing for going to Virginia and going to be a support over there. And he looks at me and he's like, who wants to go to jump school? And I'm like, oh, wait, now you have my attention. Like, you're going to throw me out of a plane. Let's get after it. What is it? And apparently I was outside my window. Mm-hmm. So he's like, hey, when you're at, you know, 18 months or 6 months or a year, whatever it is for them, hit me back up. We'll figure it out. Well, that's the day I got capped to E5, is my 18 month out or whatever. So I called my sea daddy at the time, Skip Anderson, who's a Master Chief CB. And he was working at some boat team that I heard of in Mississippi. And I was like, hey, man, can I come work for you? And he's like, yeah, give me 20 minutes. I guess he called the detailer and did the whole thing. And he's like, all right, got your orders. You're going to go there. So I ended up showing up to Special Boat Team 22 in January of 05, just bebopping along, you know, in my whites. And I was walking toward maintenance. And they look at me like, Heidler? Yeah. And they just all do this. And they point at the deck building, because back then the big area wasn't there. So I go walking in, and I never spent one day in maintenance. I was in the troop the entire time until I left and went to SWIX school, which was really cool.
Right. So the way it works over there is that, you know, we go, if you're support, non-SWIC type, mm-hmm. you go to whatever department, then they, a lot of times they'll farm you out to the troop.
To the troop.
So you working for the troop. The troop does your evaluation.
Yep.
The troop writes your awards. They do everything. You're pretty much a SWIC without the pin, really, because you're doing all the work and you're not doing SWIC stuff.
Yeah, you're not doing SWIC stuff, but you're
part you're of the troop.
Yeah. And I was very, very fortunate to be in the troop I was in, because and with the leadership I had, like Gargar.
Okay, let's talk about that leadership. I know you and it's retired warrant officer four.
Yep.
Mike Garcia.
Yep.
And with Gargar was Gargar, his nickname.
Yeah. There are right. certain guys in our community that have a nickname and you know them by their nickname, you know? So like,
true.
Went in there, you know, walked in the door, and back then the ball tap game was big.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it's still big, but I go walking in the door, not knowing anything about SWIX. I didn't know the job. I thought I was going to be on the boats, because they were like, oh, the Chang, he's on the boat. You're going to be a Chang. Like, okay. I'm going to ride on a boat. Like, I don't know what that means. Sorely mistaken. That's not what happened. But, I walk in the door and this guy was, oh, hey, how you doing? He goes to shake my hand. And as I raised my hand up, he ball taps me. So I just punched him.
That was Gargar?
No. But I just punched him as hard as I could in the face. Like, and he's laying on the ground, like holding his mouth. I'm like, what the fuck, man? And I go, oh, was hitting me in the ball is funny? Because seeing you on the ground is fucking hilarious.
that was your introduction to the SWIX.
And the LPO, a guy named Sean Milne, looks up and he's like, you guys haven't played a ball tap game. And that was it. And it's, you know, and that was the extent of, all right, he's in the team, you know, like.
It's hard to get, I mean, if you're not a SWIC, it's hard to get like embraced by the troop, right?
So, well, no, I mean, if you do your job and you're dependable, you're born in the team. But we have had, specifically, I can talk about my rate as a, or my X rate as a CM. We had people show up that were like, you suck. Like, sorry, we don't want you. You're going to go to maintenance. And we told maintenance, give me somebody else. This person cannot do the things we need to do, driving on night vision,
right,
fixing as a in the troop, as a CM or an EN, because we have some ENs that go in there,
right,
you have to be able to make fast repairs and you have to know the boat inside and out. And if you can't do that, like, you're a hindrance.
Right.
When I finally decided, I told Gargar, I was like, hey man, I want to go be a slick. And it was right when Iraq kicked off and he was like, we're about to go to Iraq for the first time, that troop. He was like, we need you to, come with us to Iraq. You're one of our best mechanics. And I was like, okay, I'll go to slick school after.
I want to go back to Gargar real quick, cause I have a lot of respect for Mike Garcia.
He's everybody. You ask Schumann, Schumann knows, like, that's my sea daddy. Like I looked up to Gargar.
Yeah. Got a lot. He's a good dude. We were tight before when I was at 22 with y'all and he, one of those guys, spoke softly, walked softly, but carried a big fucking stick.
He has probably the biggest stick. He's just walking around with it.
Just a badass. Yeah. And what was his position when you got there?
He was, if I remember right, the troop chief.
Okay.
He was a debt chief for the other debt.
Okay.
I had a different debt chief, which nothing against him, but I saw Gargar and I was like, that guy's awesome. I want to be like him. So
just a little about Gargar. He went up enlisted. So he made the command master, ended up making command master chief of SBT 22, the command that me and Greg retired from. And then, oh, that wasn't good enough. He wants more. Went a warrant officer, started out as a W3, retired a W4, I think.
Yep.
Yeah. Wealth of knowledge in that SWCC rate and just all around good guy, I think, and just polished, but he can get dirty and freaking get down and get his hands dirty and get the work done too. One of those guys.
He taught me most of the lessons that I based him and Bam Bam, who's still in, Bab.
Yeah. Bab. He's a master chief now.
Of course.
I know Bab.
Yeah. But between those two, they taught me a lot of those lessons of like, both of you can, and everybody out there who's listening can think of a leader that they had that was just phenomenal. And like, oh, I want to be that him or her. And I like that. They're awesome. But it's really hard to be that because you don't know how they're doing it. But then you look at somebody who sucks and you're like, I'll never keep my guys here past 1700. So you learn more from that bad leader from the good, you know, but looking up to certain guys, Shu, JB, good friends of mine that are peers, but I learned from them like, oh, definitely. I should do things this way.
You know?
I watched him, Gargar specifically, kick in a cipher door. I'm convinced he kicked it in. Like he could have opened it and then pushed it with his foot. No, he fucking kicked it in. But one of the boat guys left a bunch of guns on the back of the boat, and Det Stennis, PD, brought him to the quarterdeck. And Gargar came in, kicked open the door, and then beat his guys for like an hour and a half. Like just took him on a PT run. It wasn't hazing.
Right.
Wasn't
not hazing. Not physically not beating. We call beating the Navy. You work them out. Yeah. This is a beating.
It was like a full Cammy run all around Stannis, and he looked at me and he was like, get a van, get water, meet me downstairs in 5 minutes. And I was like, but, and he was like, now. Yep. And I'm going to figure it out. And that guy, I've seen him drive along and be drinking out of Nalgene and it goes empty on the boat. And he just looks around, just dips it in the river and then just keep like, dude.
Whoa.
That's some George Patton shit.
He was very Patton-esque. You know, he's an amazing human being. He put my cover on me when I made chief.
Right.
He was supposed to be my guest speaker. John knows John was my second choice.
Yeah, he knows. He said it several times.
Yeah, in the speech, he said it several times. But because Gargar was in transition and he was like, hey, man, you know, I love you, blah, blah, blah. But I don't know if I'm going to be there. And I was like, no, I understand life happens. So, but
100%. No, I'm like you. I'm with you, Greg. You always admire the people that it's hard for you to be like. Because I've had people, I'll tell his name, Kirk Hurst. I had a lot of respect for Kirk Hurst. Because I couldn't be like Kirk Hurst, and I wish I could. Yep. So I definitely know where you're coming from. So back to 22, Gargar said you were going to Iraq.
Yeah. So he's like, hey, man, you know, we have three or four mechanics. I keep thinking that we lost. No, we had four. We had four mechanics. So we was Brown, Silvis, me, and Suber. And he was like, you're one of our best guys. We're going to Iraq. We kind of need our best guys. All right, cool. So we go to Iraq. Had a great, like that was the deployment when like we were working and I was a lowly tech, but we were still going out every night. You know, black helicopters would show up with dudes that would just get on our boats or their boats. You know, I wasn't a boat guy yet. And right before we came home, I was a load planner. So for those of you who don't know, when you're moving equipment in the military, there's a plane and you say, hey, it weighs this much. It needs to be on this part of the plane for us to take off and go. And I was the only one with that qualification at the time. So I got everybody to Iraq, and then March 15th, 2006, one of the two. I don't know. That I got a brain injury. they go, hey, Gargar wants to talk to you. And immediately, you know, you start going like, oh, what I do? Like, you know, well, I had just broken a barrel of a machine gun. I had taken a turn too short and it bent the barrel. But that's how close I took this. The boat's on a trailer and I hit a building with the barrel of the gun.
Oh, geez.
And my guys come up after the op and they're like, fuck. I'm like, oh, damn, what'd you do? And they're like, no, man, you did it. And I'm like, oh, no, you know? and then I ripped we have a big sensor on top of the boat and I ripped it off. Like just rip the entire arch off the boat because somebody else was telling me to move. It wasn't my fault. No. Well, it was the FLIR system. It hit the concrete wall, broke. Oh, it was a
nightmare. So Greg is not worth a shit as a driver.
Well, no, but that wasn't it. I had a guy in the back telling me go, go, go. And he didn't realize the arch was up.
Got it.
So I ripped it off, drove out. And one of my good buddies at the time runs up to me. He's like, hey man, drop this boat, get the spare boat, pull it up next to this. We got to transfer everything over. And I'm like, why? What happened? He's like, you just ripped the arch off the boat. And I'm like, okay.
I mean, that's like millions of dollars of equipment you just ripped off.
Okay, no. The arch is like
a couple tens of grand. The FLIR's is on
there. A couple of tens of grand.
But it didn't break.
Oh, okay.
And that's when we get to, we go do the op, we come back, and we're frantically trying to switch everything back and fix the boat that's down. And the thing that was broken was the arch. The FLIR is bulletproof.
Okay, man, got it. It's true. It's pretty tough.
But he had he actually works at Stennis. I'm not going to say his name. He used to be the N6 OIC. Real old dude, but whatever. But he's standing over me, arms crossed, just lit. I don't even know why he's in country, but he's just standing over me yelling, like, I want his name. He's going to mass. He broke some stuff, and Gargar is standing behind him, and he goes, what exactly are you mad about? And he's like, he broke my FLIR. And he goes, FLIR works. He actually broke the arch. That's an N9 thing, so you can leave. And we had a spare arch. We bolted it on. Everything was fine. Like we continued on. It was great. But Gargar had my back, and that's something I learned. Like, always have your boys' back.
Yeah.
But anyway, I get called in to see Gargar, and I walk into the head shed office, and my senior chief, my chiefs, my lieutenant, everybody's in there. And I'm like, oh no, like I did something really bad. And Gargar looks up at me, he goes, hey man, we got a Red Cross message. I know you're really close to your dad, but he passed away.
Aww.
And I was like, oh, I just looked, I was like, okay. He's like, so you're going home on the next flight. There's a phone next to you to make whatever calls you need to make. And I'm like, yeah, okay, cool. Cool. And they're like, do you have any questions? I'm like, nope. But I'm your low planner. So if I leave, you can't. I'll stay till everybody else leaves. And they're like, okay. And they're looking at me like, I'm not showing emotion. I'm not crying. I'm just like, yeah, all right, cool. You know, sick. And they're like, all right, I mean, that's all we got for you. And I go to leave. And like, the phone's right there. I was like, yeah, I got it. And I walk out. And I walk upstairs and we had just had another guy, another good friend of mine, a boat guy, he was E5. His dad had passed like within the last year.
Yeah.
And I walked up and I was like, hey, Jake, can you come here for a minute? And we had our own little like phone booth in Iraq, hidden little phone booth. And I was like, come here. And he's like, oh, gets up. He's joking, like doing what we do. And I open up the phone booth. He's like, oh, step into my office. I'm like, yeah, man, for sure. And I walk in and he walks to the phone and turns and looks at me. And when he looked at me, he just goes, oh no. And I just melted, just broke down, like just lost it. And then from then on, you know, finished the deployment, went home, took care of all my dad's stuff. And then I come back to work after post-deployment leave. And they're like, hey, Gargar wants to see you. And I'm like, oh, great, man. Like, did my fucking, you know, dog die, like great.
Right.
What's every next? Time I get told to go see Gargar, something bad happens.
Yeah.
And I walk in and I'm like, oh, you want to see me? I think he was the senior chief at the time. I was like, you want to see me, senior? And he goes, yeah. We were talking about before we went to Iraq, you wanted to go be a boat guy, right? And I was like, well, yeah. He's like, do you still want to do that? And for those of you who don't know, you have to get like a PT test, a psych test, a, you know, blood work. And like it for the fleet. And I found this out when I was in Guam, for a fleet sailor to want to go, you know, special program, special warfare, it's a dick dance. It's hard.
It's tough.
Because damn right, your divo isn't going to just let you go for a day to go to medical and whatever. We're lucky we have our own medical. We have our own, like they can do most of it. If you're going from a boat team or a SEAL team or whatever, you have all the infrastructure there to get you to go. And I walk in, I'm like, yeah, I mean, I still want to do it. And he's like, okay, cool. And he grabs a stapled packet of paper. I'll never forget it because until this time, remember, I called a buddy of mine for orders to 22 and I call, I got, so I'd never seen what orders look like. I got, just never really.
Yeah. You never. Yeah.
And he throws this thing at me and I catch it. And I'm like, what's this? And he's like, orders to Sook School. You need to get a package started. So what he had done is the way I handled myself as a boat guy or as a boat guy, as a tech with the passing of my dad and all that, he called a buddy of his who the Sook detailer was a guy from my boat team who had gone there. And he's like, hey, do you know, remember Greg, the tech? He's like, yeah. He wants to go Sook. Okay. So they got me orders before I did a prep because they wanted me
Wow.
To become a boat guy. Yeah. So this is right around Perform to Serve when that happened.
Yeah.
And guys were like, Sailors of the Year were getting kicked out of the Navy. And it was crazy. Yeah. And Gargar was like, no, we want this kid. So I went, and JB and Shu were both instructors.
Yeah. I was going to ask you that.
Yeah. So I get my orders and I drove from here to San Diego.
So from Mississippi, basically, to San Diego.
Okay. In my, I had a 2007 Chevy Avalanche Southern Comfort Edition, which if Shumu was here right now, and I hope he listens to this, he'll text you. Like, it was gunmetal gray and it faded to North Carolina blue at a 22-inch rim. It was ridiculous. It was like a $60,000 car. And it's the only thing I bought when my dad died with his money that he had. Stupid 26-year-old moron, right?
Right, right.
But I drive out there and I call up one of my trusted, I think he was a warrant officer at the time. I call him. I'm like, hey, I'm at Coronado. I don't know where I'm going. And he's like, keep going. There's a little marina. So I change into my whites on the side of the road, drive in. These kids of the quarterdeck are like, oh, you're checking in SWCC school. Cool. Hop in the van. I was like, I got my own car. I'll drive. So I followed them to the SWCC schoolhouse and they're all like, oh, hey, you're checking in. I'm like, yep. And they see my rocker. It's a special boat team 22. So now you have all these kids who fresh in the Navy. Oh my God, you were at a boat team. And I just looked at him and I was like, yeah, man, I only worked on the boats. I never even saw any SWCCs. Like, I don't know anything.
What year was that again?
2007.
They had just became a rate like right around that time, seven time frame. So you had people coming from boot camp to SWCC school. But before that, it was fleeters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There were fleet rates that came to SWCC school. So you had the first time in the history of your rate that you had 18, 19-year-olds going to SWCC school.
Yep. And that, well, that I know. Yeah. But these kids are like, they see the rocker and they think like he's in a boat team. He has some secret knowledge to get through.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, look, man, I lied, but I was like, I never even saw any boat guys. I just worked on boats. Like, I don't know.
Right.
And Schumann at the time had an SS Chevy truck that sounded like a 71 Cuda. Like, this thing just, so I'm standing there and I hear the truck. And for a second, I was like, that sounds good. Like, just being a mechanic, I was like, that sounds good, man. That thing's got some lope to it.
Yeah.
And then I hear a door open, I hear a door close, and I hear, yo, where's Heidler? And I knew the voice, and I was like, oh, no, right? Because Shu's not a small guy.
No, he's a big old boy.
Yeah, so I
like
turn the
220
corner.
To him is small.
Yeah. So when you go through, when you went through, it was different now, but when you went through SWCC school in my day, there was a hard part, you know, getting wet and sandy, blah, 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 and then you BCT, and then you went to CQT, which is like teaching you things and getting you ready for point. Well, Shu and BB were CQT instructors. So I thought, they can't fuck with me. I'm a BCT guy right now. Like, you know, so I turned the corner. I was like, and I looked right at instructor Schumann and I go, sup fucker. And you hear 60 kids just like, oh my God. And he's like, what up, man? Like, yeah, how thing? And like, gave each other a little like shake hand hug thing. And he's like, hey man, don't quit. Like, blah, blah, blah. And I'll see you in 6 weeks. You know, like I got something for your ass. Like, and give me like the challenge. Like, hey, don't quit. Like, let's go, like, get to us. And I was like, yeah, for sure, man. And he said something along the lines of like, you know, I'm gonna have your ass. And I was not yet, bitch. Like,
talking shit.
Like, wait till six weeks from now. And man, it was a good time. Like, I got day one, week one, they were like, where's that same LPO that I had when I showed up as a tech, he was there. And like, there was like six or seven instructors there that knew me from the team. So we had a room inspection. I hear, you know, where's Chief? He's retired. So where's Chief Milne's MST? Where's Heidler? And I was like, oh no. And I raised my hand. It was like, drop meatball, go get wet. And I got a little bit of extra attention, you know?
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about, the Schumann was in our one of our hold fast episodes.
That was a great episode
back in the day. Thank you.
Great episode.
But this guy, did he wear tidy shorty shorts?
We all wear tidy.
Yeah, that's right. So he wore that. And I tell you, the first time I met Schumann, I kept my hair always a little longer than the average sailor, right? I always did.
Well, not Schumann long. Like,
no, it wasn't Schumann long, but it was longer than the average fleeter.
Yeah.
He goes, hey, Heath. Well, hey, bro. He goes, nice hair.
I believe that. Yeah. So
I think y'all kind of look alike, except Heath is like the Cajun.
And he's the Mexican version.
Yeah, he's the Mexican.
I've told Schumann that, dude, I'm going to get a text from Schumann after this for sure. But I used to tell Schumann all the time, I was like, you look like a really jacked Freddie Mercury.
Yeah, dude. Yes. Yes.
Like if Freddie Mercury was like, 230 and could deadlift like 500 pounds, he looked like you. And he's like, oh, shut up, asshole. And I showed like a side-by-side picture and he's just like,
he just needs a mustache.
Yeah. Do not ever grow a mustache. Like,
yeah, dude. I beg you to grow a mustache. 100%.
No, but she's a great dude. I love Shu to death.
Yeah, he's great.
We made senior people together, and there was a lot of talk that he wouldn't make it and that I wouldn't make it, and we both made it. And it was like, yeah, just middle fingers to the sky. Like, yeah,
but you guys were killing it. You deserved to make it. You know.
And but we both had our, you know, Shu had his.
Everybody has skeletons. Everybody has skeletons in their closet. So,
You never think. And for those of you out there, you know, that are currently serving and like, oh, senior chief results, like you think you deserve it or you don't think you deserve it. Then it happens. You're like, oh shit.
Yeah, that's how I felt.
Yeah. It was crazy.
Definitely. So Swick School. So you got through, you got to Schumann's part. Does Schumann give you the business?
I mean, there was a little bit of extra love, you know, but at the same time, they would be like, get the fuck in here, bear crawl. We'd bear crawl in there. And then I close the door and they're like, hey, stand up. What's up? Like, tell us what's going on with the class. And I'm like, well, first of all, the guy we have leading is a fucking moron. Like, and I, at one point I was like, hey, put this guy in charge, not me. Champion. He's still in. But, and so I was like, put him as the class leader because he's a fucking maniac. Put me as the assistant class leader and then put this other guy as, you know, the MAA. Like, this is what I would do. And like, you don't want to be in charge? I was like, no. And here's why. Champ is an absolute psychopath. So he's going to be like, God, we got to pick this up. Blah, blah, blah. And I'm going to be like, mom, hey, do you want him to yell like that? Like, yeah. Just do what he says. Let's get it. You know? And it worked. And we had nobody quit our class for like a long time. Like it was pretty cool. But stuff like that. Like, and then I ended up, we were doing land nav at a Camp Pendleton. And I was like, hey, you know, on the gear list, because in our job, there's always a gear list for, hey, you have to have
X. For land nav, just a little quick so everybody knows, it's pretty much, they give you a compass. I want you here. Figure it the fuck out.
Figure it out. Here's your 6 points. Figure it out. And they, I mean, they give you training, and it's easy if you know how to do it. It's really hard if you don't, you know? And I remember Shu being like, I want everybody to wear jungle boots. And I was like, Shu, there's no ankle support. Someone's going to fuck their ankle up. Like, it's a bad idea. And he's like, just, it's muddy. Just do it. Okay. And I'm wearing a radio on my back, and me and my buddy Paul are going to the next point, and I just ate shit down a mountain, and my ankle turned all the way in. It was bad. And I'm
shit.
And I hit the ground, and I'm not screaming, but I'm like, mother, like, this hurts, you know? And the guy who I was with was a corpsman with the Marines for the second, I think, push through Fallujah. So anything I got going on right now is a sideshow, right?
But yeah.
And I'm like, I'm like yelling because my ankle hurts. And he grabs my body armor and shoves me in the ground and goes, you're not dying. Shut the fuck up. And I just like, I realized who was talking to me and what his,
So I knew his history.
Yeah. So I just grabbed my body armor and just went like,
like a little puppy.
Yeah. Okay. I'll be quiet. And I can hear the radio handset is going like, team sick. Blah, and they're trying to get in touch with us to be like, hey, what's going on? And my buddy pulls my boot off and you can see my ankle swelling. And he's like, shit. Throws my boot back on, ties it real tight, and he goes, all right, man, we have two choices. You can sit here till the instructors show up. I'm moving on, or you can come with us. And I was like, hold on. I stood up and I could go. Is that dorsiflex or whatever? I could bring my toes up,
yeah,
but I couldn't point my toes down.
Got it.
So I could walk up a hill and then back down it. And that's how I went through Camp Pendleton for the last like 2 points of our thing. Get finished. They're like, yeah, you definitely sprained your ankle. You ripped a piece of bone off.
Oh,
with
no
it.
Shit. Wow.
And all actually, when I fell, all I could see in my head, I was class 5'8". All I could see was, the old school, clocks, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. 00.59 right. in red. I saw, I was like, you're getting rolled.
You get rolled. Yeah.
I thought you had to do an extra week. I'm getting rolled. I'm screwed. And, to their credit, they didn't do anything immoral, unethical, or, you know, illegal. But they were like, oh, hey, the whole class is doing a run around the compound. And I'm like, fuck, dude, I got a sprained ankle. I can't do this. And they'd be like, oh, we also need somebody to do this. Hey, Heather, go do this.
They took care of you. Right, nice. No, they took care of you.
Well, because, and I think what happened was because I had shown other things prior, they're like, we don't need this. But the one thing they needed me to do is it was called the Swick PRT. It was like push-ups, sit-ups, a couple miles of a run, and then a mile swim.
Right.
In fins. And I was like, hey, can I not do fins? Cause my ankle hurts. And like, well, by the instruction says you have to do it with fins. All right, man, cool. So I do the run. I do it. Oh, and at the end, you had to pick up a 50 cal and press it over your head 3 times. I'm like, all right, cool. So I hit the water in my fins. I make like 10 or 15 kicks and I just took my fins off and I clipped them in my belt. I'm like, I'll just do it like this with a sea anchor on my waist.
Yeah.
Two of my buddies come up next to me and they're like, give us your fins. Like, guide off us. And it's as a class, you try to help each other.
Right.
Well, yeah. If a guy's weak, you're like, hey man, come on, we got you. So they get me back. And then like 20 yards off the pier again, they give me back my fins, I swim in my fins. And my ankle is feeling good because San Diego Bay is frigid. Right.
Yes.
And I get out of the water. I kind of limp over to the last thing I have to do. And 90% of the class is already done. You know, I'm just trying to muscle through it. And I lift the gun up and I don't remember whose face. I'm sure it was Shu and Justin and all of you, but I was like, 1, 2, 3. I looked at it and I went 4. And then I dropped the 50 cal from like full extension, like a complete asshole. And then I limped in the showers and I was pissed off, but graduated, you know,
hey.
Went on. So
that's courageous, man. You got through it.
It was just that I knew what the job was. And I knew like everybody's looking at from San Diego or from Coronado, you can see the ships, mm-hmm. you know, going in and out. Yep. Guys are like, oh, I don't want to be in the fleet. I'm like, you don't know the fleet, kid. Like, you know, high school. Mm-hmm. I know that if I quit this, they're not going to send me to whiny me. They're not going to keep me here. They're going to send me back to the team.
Yeah.
As a failure.
Yeah.
That's what I won't have. I won't go back to the team with Gargar and those guys looking at me like, you failed.
Yeah.
You
know?
So, and that's what kept me going.
Definitely.
So
definitely. Cause you would go back to 22, but not as just
as a boat guy,
CM2.
Yeah.
As a CM2 failure.
Yep. Exactly.
You got through it though. Mm-hmm. You got through it. Went back to 22 after that.
So Shu and, JB printed out orders and then like white out and messed it and put 20. On them and like, yeah, here's everybody's orders. They're passing out orders and mine say not 22. And
I'm 20 like, hey, is in Virginia.
In Virginia. Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. So I looked, I was like, yeah, no, my orders are wrong. And what they said going through SWIG school, like I was never honor man. I didn't study. I didn't have to. All this information they're teaching me, I've known for 8 years mm-hmm. at this point. And they're like, hey man, like, why aren't you? You should be our stud because we sent you there. Like you're verified, all this other shit. And I was like, yeah, but here's the deal. What does the honor man get? He gets his choice of orders. Where am I going? I'm going home. You're not going to send me to 12 on the West Coast or 20 on the East Coast. You're going to send me back 22. And they're like, okay, like I can see that, you know, thought process. And they gave me orders that said 20. And I just looked right at him. I was like, these are wrong. Like, no. And they were trying to play a trick on me, but it was back 22.
So playing football games.
They're playing football games. And, but yeah, so I went back 22.
That's cool because this, so anybody knows, 22 is from where our house is probably 10 miles as a crow flies, 25 minutes if you're driving. It is on the most beautiful piece of property in Western Hancock County, Mississippi. Yep. It's tons of deer, hogs. I mean, wildlife is awesome.
There's peacocks out there.
There's a peacock. Really? Yeah, there is. Yes.
We used to do land nav. You'd be walking along and all of a sudden you see a peacock in the middle of the, you know, that's forest cool. of Mississippi. Yeah. And you're like, am I hallucinating or is that a fucking awesome. Peacock?
Right on the Pearl River. Yeah. It's just beautiful. Yeah. And it, to me, it was the best, the most beautiful place to be stationed.
It is easily the best command in the Navy.
I love
it. On YouTube, it's Navy's best kept secret. And that's supposed to be SWIC back in the day. But right. It was 22. Like, if you watch that video, you're like, that's all 22. We don't talk about this place because it's awesome.
It's awesome. I mean, retirements are right on the Pearl River. Yeah. Outside with a awning over you, obviously, but it was like your ceremony was beautiful. It's the most beautiful place to be stationed at. And it's in a good, normally bases are on the shit part of town.
Well, but it's also not a base.
It's not a base. It's owned by NASA.
They got money.
And NSW got money and they do a good job of taking care of their sailors with that money. Uh-huh. Okay. You go back to 22 as SB2.
I'm a boat guy. Yes.
You're SB2.
I was SB2 and then in transit I made first class.
Okay.
And I had the senior chief call me. It was like, hey, so this is who I am, this is who you are, you're gonna be in my troop. I'm gonna send you to armorer school before I made first class. I was like, you're gonna be our weapons rep. Okay, cool, man, no problem. We need you to go to Crane, Indiana and do all that. Like, all right, cool, no problem. So I go, I had to show up to the team first. I show up to the team and one of the kids from the class in front of me, real asshole. Guys that know me and know him know that this guy just sucks.
You want to give his name out there?
No, I'm not gonna do it.
Okay. Yeah.
But scared. I see. Nah, that's fine. But I'm in my whites and I see this kid walking from the dead building to the quarterdeck, and I don't have a badge, so I gotta hit the button. You know. But as I walk up, he like beep, and he types in his number, and he's like, "Hey, what's up, man? You just graduated? You just showing up?" And I'm looking at him, going like, "Bitch, I know you. Like we know each other. You were a class ahead of me. Like I know this kid." And he's acting like he doesn't know who I am. Like, well, but he's that guy who he probably doesn't know who I am because he didn't pay attention.
But he's like, I'm pretty well known around here. If you need anything, you just let me know.
He's been there a fucking week.
He's been there a couple months because classes are
okay. Yeah, yeah, guys. So a couple months. Even. Yeah, I'm well known around
but
here.
But I look at him and he's like, you know, if you need anything, just let me know. I'm pretty well known around here. And I was like, all right, like knowing you don't know who, not to toot my own, but you don't know who the fuck I am.
Yeah, yeah.
I hear you.
So I walk on the quarterdeck and two of my guys who were on my troop with me before I left are on the quarterdeck. Oh shit. Are on the quarterdeck.
Take it easy, sailor.
Yeah, right? Junior sailor. So they're on the quarterdeck and I walk on the quarterdeck and they stand up and like, Craig! And I'm like, what up, fuckers? Like, give each other hugs. And yeah. I couldn't resist. Again, one of those things where I just did a thing, not knowing I was doing a thing. I look back and I go, yeah, man, if you need anything, let me know.
So that same you'd kid, already been there as a CM. Yeah,
but he didn't know that.
He didn't know that.
I walked in the door, he's like, why do these guys know this kid? And I was like, yeah, man, if you need anything, you let me know. And then, yeah, so... So I went to the crane, went to the armor school, and in the armor school I made first.
Okay.
And
came back as a first.
Oh, I came back as a second and then made first in my first school before I even trooped up.
Got it. Got it.
And then I get pulled into the operations office where Bam Bam is. And he looks at me and he's like, hey, so we're gonna make you a driver. And usually you start as a gunner and then you become a driver. And remember, I was gonna be a gunner weapons rep. And he's like, how do you feel about that? I was like, I mean, I understand I got to put in my work and put in dues and all that, but you know, I don't want to step on anybody's toes. Cause you know how it is where, you know, Jamie thinks she just did a gunner's tour. Now she's going to drive.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, never mind. Now he's going to drive. Now she's salty.
You kind of cut over to exactly. People.
They don't know that I've spent time with the team. They don't know.
All they know is you're coming in here and you're,
I'm a
you're,
new guy. I'm and a you're, new boat guy.
You're topping them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I was like, I know I'm going to step on toes. So whatever. And Bam Bam just kind of like looks at me and shakes, you know, nods his head. And I go, oh, don't get me wrong. I'll take it. So yeah. And I ended up being a boat driver with Troy Norell, who recently passed away. And then some other guys who are still active, who are just a phenomenal human beings. And we drove and then the story you want to get into happened and then we deployed. So
let's get into that story. All right. This was what year was that?
So I did my driving tour actually. Yeah. So I did my driving tour in 2008.
Yes.
And then we deployed in 10 and went to Iraq to Basra. And then, yeah. So that was that 2 year time, 2008, 2010.
Let's talk about it, baby. Let's talk about it.
I know you want to hear it. So
giving you the hungry eyes.
So yeah. Good reference. I like it.
What's that? Giving you
hungry eyes?
Oh, hungry eyes. Yeah.
All right. come on, Jimmy, go. I'll lift you.
Some dirty dancing shit.
We'll break the glass. It'll be a whole thing. In sometime, again, I have a disclaimer, I have a brain injury, but it was like 2008. We get told, hey, show up. We got to work this Saturday. I'm like, fuck, man. Like, why? And I was like, just show up Saturday. Cool. So the entire troop shows up to work on a Saturday. And one of the boats has this giant arm on it with a camera. We're like, what'd you do to, it was a Rumbaugh. What'd you do to Brad's boat? You know, and we're like, he's going to be the camera boat. I'm like, for what? And like, well, we're filming a movie. I'm sorry. Excuse us. Like we didn't get told, but it was Act of Valor, the movie Act of Valor.
Okay. Let me talk about Act of Valor. That put Swix on the map.
Yeah,
it really did.
It shined a giant eye of Sauron onto Swix.
Yes. Yeah. Because if you haven't seen the movie, please watch it. It's a phenomenal movie. And the main parts are played by actual military members.
Yeah, that's cool.
So, which is awesome. And there's a part in there that the Swiss come in hardcore, throwing down with their Gatling gun. And it's beautiful. Well,
two Swiss missions.
And it's filmed in Stennis. The reason being is because of the land, the weather and the land really emulates Central South America.
And we also had a live range.
Yeah, and a live range. So they could go hard.
So in the movie, if you've never seen it, Rosalind Sanchez gets kidnapped as a CIA operative and somebody has to go save her. And it's a troop of SEALs or basically a squad of SEALs.
Yeah.
And things go awry and they call in, hey, we need you to come get us.
And that's where the Swiss come in.
And we went.
The taxi drivers for the SEALs.
Uber. All right. Just really pissed off Uber.
Yeah.
So we had to do this, you know, day of shooting. And I actually knocked out one of my guy's teeth on accident, which is funny. He didn't get to be in the movie because
his
tooth got knocked out. He had to go to the hospital. On the boats, you have a crank that you let the boat off the trailer.
Yep.
And we have a process. Like, I start the boat when it hits the water, and then he walks up to the boat, unhooks it, and gives me a thumbs up. Well, today, things weren't really, it's Saturday. Nobody wants to be here. We don't know we're filming a movie yet.
Yeah.
And he's just like, waiting on you. And I'm like, oh, okay. I'm thinking,
he's ready.
The trailer. So I put it in gear and I hit the throttles, and he hadn't unhooked me yet. So he leans in to grab this giant handle that cranks the boat. And when he reached for it, the crank spun around.
Oh, shit.
Knocked his tooth out. And we're like, oh, shit. Like,
did you go to DRB for that?
No.
Okay.
I didn't go to DRB until I was a senior chief.
Okay. We'll get into that later. That's my favorite part. All right.
But yeah, so he's like, oh, my tooth. And then we're like, all right, hey, so you take him to the hospital. We got to figure out whatever the rest of our day is. And then we filmed that part of the movie. So I picked two boat drivers to be in the movie, and it was me and Troy, because me and Troy knew each other how they were going to drive. Right. So,
and that's Troy
Norrell. So who passed away?
God rest his soul.
Amazing human being. Yeah. I love him to death.
Yeah.
He taught me a lot too, but
genuine good dude.
We would have this thing where like the boats will get so close and you think you're going to crash, and then the boat in front's jet wash slows you down. And we would drive like that, like just at night on nods, you know, scariest environment imaginable. And we would just drive well. And they're like, hey, we want you two to drive together. All right, cool. And then the other two drivers that were with us were the other two, the camera boat, and the other thing. So a great experience on that part. And then the way that movie got made, for those who don't know, is that Navy's Best Kept Secret video got made. And if you guys remember commercials at the time, there was like one where it was like, there was a beach and you see the waves crashing. It's nighttime. And then it gets dark, and then it comes back up. You see footprints, and then it gets dark. It's like Navy SEALs. Right. And I'm like, oh, cool. That was supposed to be the like SVV SEALs commercial.
Right.
And there were supposed to be like six or eight of them.
SEAL delivery vehicle. Yeah. Yeah, that's what SDV stands for.
Tiny submarine that brings SEALs in. And that was supposed to be their part. And then there was going to be an assault one. And there's going to be all the different things SEALs do.
Yeah.
And it was a great thing for the Navy to do for a recruiting tool.
Right. For NSW. Right.
But then they said, hey, a guy's name is Mouse, and he owns, Bandito Media or something like that. But they're like, hey, we want you to make a video for boat guys, for the Riverine unit. And the Navy's Best Kept Secret came out, and whoever at the higher up level saw it and went, we want that video to be a full length movie for SEALs as a recruiting tool. Basically the Top Gun for SEALs.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And those guys started filming, and then the way they got around it was they got clearance from the Navy and from SOCOM to just follow us around on training and film our training and then use it as footage. So it was like zero cost to them. And we're already here doing it.
Right.
So besides that Saturday, everything that happened was already a training op, and they just filmed a bunch of it. So
they made a movie out of it.
Wow.
Yeah.
So let's get into the movie. What happened to you during the movie?
So after the Saturday event, we went home and everything's fine. And they gave, he's out now. So they gave Art a beautiful prosthetic tooth. So everybody out there worrying, like, he has a great smile now. But we went to do another training event, which is where a helicopter picks up. You drive the boat, a helicopter comes up behind you, picks you up with slings. Everybody climbs up a ladder into the helicopter, and then you slide down a rope back into the boat. The helicopter comes down, lets the boat go, and the helicopter goes away. The boat goes away. And it's in the movie. You can see it right after the last shot that the Hilo got for the movie. Classic NSW fashion. They go, hey, let's do one more run. All right, sure. And they said on this run, they're like, hey, just the, it's called a meets master. He's the guy that can send you up or down the line. He's got, has all the knowledge. They go, just him and Greg are going to go into the bird. The rest of us just stay in the boat. I want to go home. Let's get out of here. All right, cool. So I go up the ladder. He comes up the ladder. We're sitting there in the bird for a few minutes. And then he runs over to you drop a rope down a hole that's in the middle of the helicopter. And you have to slide down this thing. And I see him drop the rope down. He looks at it. He shakes it. He says something to the air crew. The air crew holds his belt. And like, he leans forward, he's just shaking the shit out of it. He just goes like, he throws his hands up. Like, I don't care, whatever. And he goes like, come here. And I run up to him. And he goes, I can't tell if the rope is in the boat or not. Go. And I just grab the boat and I go, what? And I just like slide down this rope. I hit the arch, because you raise the arch up when you're under the bird. And I hit the arch. So I knew I was in the boat. So I just let go. I fall in the boat. I'm like, cool, didn't die. Let's get after it. And I run around to the console where the throttles and the steering wheel and all that are.
That's, these boats are only like 33 feet long. It's SOCAR, right?
Yep, SOCAR. It's a special operations craft for marine.
Right. Yep. There's not a lot of room for error in a 33-foot boat.
No, everybody has their 3 feet of space. And, so I'm sitting there at the console. I'm getting ready to start the engines and all this. And my chief is just like smacking the hell out of me. And I'm like, what? You know, what's going on? And he points at a little island that's right next to us. And usually when the bird cuts away, you drive away.
Away from the bird.
Well, I see there's a, and I go like, yeah, got it. Don't go that way. Go this way. Cool. And I feel us hit the water. I start the engines. I grab the throttles and everything goes dark. And I wake up to stop, dude. It's disrespectful, right? I wake up to the sound of the helicopter getting more power, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you can hear it winding up.
And if any of you out there know what a pistol squat is, it's like a one-legged squat with your legs straight out, right? Yeah. So I was basically doing that. I was stuck with one of my legs tucked up against me, the other one straight. And I hear the bird gaining power. And for some reason, I thought it was going to do like a plane and do this, and it was going to chop us all up. And I was like, oh, cool. We're going to die. Cool. And like, I was completely, dude, I was okay with it. I wasn't scared. I was like, oh, cool. This is where we die. This sucks. And then the bird got quiet and I realized it was getting farther away. And that's when I started to like, not panic, but like, oh, I got to figure this out. And you start to hear, you know, you hear sounds around you and everybody's grabbing dudes into the boat. So what happened was the helicopter's altimeter said they were at 10 feet. Well, I stand a little less than 6 feet tall and there's a giant hook on the bottom of the bird. Well, it came down. Everybody else who's not driving the boat and looking forward ducks or jumps out of the boat. And that giant hook hit me in the back of the head, knocked me unconscious. It then hit the console of the boat, ripped the console out on three sides. And one of my legs went underneath the console and then it dropped down on my shin. So one leg is straight. One leg is tucked under me. I'm underneath the console. I hear guys yelling and screaming like, hey, where's Eric? Where's this guy? And they're like pulling guys in the water. And I go to lift this console off me. A one-legged squat, lifting however much in aluminum and steel this is.
A lot.
I'm not lifting that, right? I'm not a big dude. And I lifted it. I was like, well, that doesn't work. And then I got that shot of adrenaline, like moms picking up cars off their kids and shit.
Right.
And I was just like, and I throw it off me and I hear, where's Greg? And I was like, here. And I just eat shit on the side of the boat. And
it's not funny, but it's funny.
No, it's a good story, but it's at the time, it was a fucking nightmare.
So you got hit by the helicopter.
I like how your voice cracks. Here.
Yeah. No, dude, I did, because I was just like I was out of it. So like, I was still kind of loopy. And what happened was you always have two boats. You have the boat being worked with the helicopter, and you have another boat just as a safety boat. Well, the safety boat is who's driving it? I'll think of his name in a minute. I can't believe I can't remember his name right now. But what's up? What's up, Biggs? He works at the debt right now. He's a retired master chief.
Eric?
Billy Jack.
Oh, Billy Jack.
Billy Jack is driving the other boat.
Billy Jack. Now, what's his last name?
Jordan.
Oh, Billy Jordan. Who was a CMC at that time, right?
Well, no. He was just in our troop.
In our troop. Okay.
So he's driving along and he looks back and he thinks everything's fine. He's like, all right, let's go. Like the other boat will be behind us. And one of my buddies is looking. He goes, hey, it looks like there's a lot of light on the boat. And what it is you're supposed to wave chem lights like, hey, we need help. But we didn't have any chem lights. They were on these poles. So guys are ripping them off the poles, trying to wave the poles like, hey, we have a problem. And luckily a buddy of mine was like, hey, I think they have an issue. And Billy Jack turned back around and was like, oh, shit. And their boat T-boned our boat. And Troy Norrell came across and he lays down on the ground next to me. He's like, dude, are you all right? And I was like, dude, it hurts. He's like, what hurts? I was like, my neck and my back. And then I start laughing. I go, my neck and my back, right? From like Friday.
because I'm
a child, right? So I'm like, times of you might die, I'm still making jokes. And they drive us back. The bird that hit us had to go back to their base because it's a mid-air collision. Yeah. So they're getting drug tested. They're getting, is the bird okay? Like all this crazy stuff. And we got just kind of left, you know?
Yeah.
The other bird, all day, we had been landing in like a three-sided field with trees on three sides. And when the birds came in, they're like, you know, let me kind of see where I'm going. And then they land. I watched this bird just turn, spin, drop into the spot. Amazing pilots with the Special Operations Aviation Regiment for the Army. Amazing pilots. But
oh, yeah. Those guys are damn good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sure. They slammed this thing into the ground. And the one of the guys comes running out, the air crew with the helmet, you know, the headset that's attached to the bird. And he's running, running, running. His head gets jerked. And I see him just grab the helmet and just throw it into the helicopter. And I have my corpsman has one side and my medic has the other side. And they're just like, they're playing tug of war with me. Like, hey, we got the ambulance right here. And he's like, I have a fucking helicopter. And he's like, but I have the ambulance. And he's like, I still have a fucking helicopter. And I was like, stop it. I just laid in a gravel parking lot. Just, oh, man, this hurts. And the air medic, or I don't know what it's called. I don't know army terminology. But he takes a knee next to me and goes, what hurts, man? And I go, I just feel like I need to crack my neck. And he just grabs my chin and my throat. And I was like, shouldn't have said that, right? And he goes, nope. And he's like, C-collar. And like they put me on a C-collar, spine board.
Is it kind of like a dog collar? So you don't lick it. So the dog don't lick his balls?
No. but they flew me to a hospital. And then it was like a episode of ER. Like 28-year-old male, stabilized in the field. He was hit by a helicopter and a boat. Had some cervical spine issues from that. Had some lower back issues from that.
Brain injury?
I do actually have a brain injury. You know that?
I heard a few times.
Yeah. That's the Act of Valor story. Like it's a cool story.
Too bad they hadn't been filming. I mean,
they weren't filming. That's the shitty part. Like they finished filming.
Yeah.
That'd be a great part of the movie.
It would have been amazing. Like, oh, what happened? Oh, the boat guys all got crushed by the bird and then, you know, and then still made the
offer. Helicopter and a boat.
Yeah. So that's your story that you like.
I love it because dude, it couldn't happen to a better person.
Oh, thanks, man. I appreciate that.
That was 08 time frame, you said?
Yes. I believe I was 08, 09, somewhere in there. Cause it was before the 2010 deployment.
So let's get into that deployment 2010. Well,
when you first met Craig, didn't he tell you that story? Like just
when I first met him, we'll get into that later, but it was later on when we talked about it.
Yeah. And
I didn't hear
it. You were like, I met this guy and he got hit by a helicopter.
Yeah.
It was.
Well, so Heath was at the team. And again, this is fast forwarding a little bit, but I was at construction battalion. I got to 22. I went to SWCC school. I came back to 22. I then went to Guam. I came back to 22. And that's when.
When you went to Guam, did you make chief in Guam?
No, I made chief at the team. And then it was right before the deployment. So I was a leading petty officer. I made chief. And they're like, well, you're going on deployment. You were already going to lead as the LPO, like four guys go to Guam and do a couple training events.
Which is cool because that's where you met a guy that we both have a lot of respect for, JJ Gonzalez.
So I met JJ when I took orders there.
Okay.
So it was after the deployment. So I did the deployment. I came back from the deployment and they're like, hey, you're going to be a team chief, which in our rate, you need certain milestones to make rank.
Most rates in the Navy, you make chief, you can drop a package for warrant officer.
Yes.
Now you can't do that in a SWCC rate. You got to do a deployment as a team chief.
It's one of the prereqs that they look at. Like we're not even, you can write the package all you
want. But they ain't going to look
at it. We're just going to be like,
they want to see your leadership.
Yeah. So I got my team chief. And my ex-wife at the time knew enough about my rate to go, oh, you got your team chief. Well, I'm giving you full custody of the boys. So you can't be a single parent and do that job. And I was like, okay, cool. So I walked into work and I was like, hey, to Gargar, who was the ops master chief at the time.
Yep.
He was just getting ready to move over to CMC and Shu was in ops with me. And he was like, what do you want to do? And I was like, well, I'm not going to sit at this team for years and not do the job. What orders are up? And he's like, you can go to 12, you can go to 20, you can go to Guam. And I was like, Guam, I'll take Guam. I like Guam. Me and the kids will go there. And then he moved to Command Master Chief and somebody had to be the Ops Master Chief.
Right.
And he was like, hey, I want you as a non-SWCC master, non-deployed team chief, just a new guy chief. I want you to be that seat because I know you'll sit the seat. And Schumann literally saved me in that because I'd be sitting there with, you know, three monitors freaking out, trying to answer emails and do whatever. And he would walk in, make me a protein shake and then lay on the couch and watch like Tom and Jerry. but he would sit there and be like, eat, you need to eat because you're burning in. You know, so he kept me sane. And then I went to Guam for 3 years and that's where I met JJ Gonzalez, who that guy's.
He's inspiring.
He's chief. He is Navy, like Navy.
Yeah, for those who don't know JJ, we did an episode with him back, I think, in April of last year. Mm-hmm. Correct me if I'm wrong, April, May time frame. Right. It was the resilience episode. Phenomenal, phenomenal guy.
Amazing. He gets the Navy. He gets the leadership. He as a chief already, I, you know, I've been a chief for a few years and I'm sitting there, we're doing the season, like these, you know, E6s are making E7, they're doing their thing. And he takes his,
we don't make E7, we make chief.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, thank you, Junior Sailor. I appreciate it. Cool. So, he takes his vessel and he was like, you see this? And it had like seashells on it. It was really pretty.
Yeah.
But he takes it, he goes, you see this? And he throws it across the concrete.
It don't mean shit.
He's like, this don't mean shit. And even I was like, like, what? Dude, what are you doing to your vessel? Yeah. And he opens it and he goes, the book is what's important.
Yes.
And I was like, wow, yes, dude, that's crazy.
And I preached that the time I, it's true.
Yep. But yeah, but JJ, going back to it, JJ is an amazing human being. He helped me out a lot. I didn't understand that he's the base CMC. He's not my CMC because I have my own,
right,
you know, CMC. So we'd be out in advance and I was like, what's base CMC? He's like, he's not my CMC. He's just a, he's just JJ, you know? And I think that's what kept me in his relationship. That, and my wife's the best chief I've ever met. And she,
I want to get into Jen later. Yeah.
She definitely would, she would send me, I was giving a class on something and all of a sudden, like I get like, and I check my phone and it's the new nav admin for who gives a shit. And I'm like, see, this is the type of thing I'm talking about. Like she wants to make sure that I know that the PRT standards change when we're not doing a PRT for 3 months, but you know, like,
yeah.
So, and her and JJ were at the selection board together. That's how they met each other.
Oh, okay.
So they did the chief selection board. She was a recorder and then we were all in Guam together. So yeah.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So so when you came back from Guam, what year was that in Guam? 2000.
So I was in Guam from 2013 to 2016.
Then you came back to 22 after that?
Yeah. Yep.
Let's get into that because that's where I think that's where I met you.
Right after that. Yeah. So I come back to the team. I take a team chief again because I'd given up my team chief to go to Guam. Took a team chief. I was already married to Jenny at the time.
Yep. You met Jenny in?
In Guam.
Guam.
So okay, it was during the season. I like to give the professionalism class and I would take my, I have the magnetic.
You gave professionalism?
Well, hear me out.
Okay. Right?
So as a boat guy, people think that we're all unprofessional and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, pretty much.
Stop it. Right. Okay. Yeah, you're right. But stop it. but I would take, I had the magnetic ribbons and at the time I had exactly 4 rows.
Okay.
So it wasn't, you know, 2 at the top, but it was just,
exactly
it was
4, just a rectangle. 3 across, 4 down.
So I would take it and I would turn it upside down. Right. And I would put my sunglasses on my head to see who's got
the cojones,
the balls.
Because this is your like, chief's election.
Yeah. Yeah. Who's chief's, got the balls to say, hey, chief, you're fucked up. And I would do it on purpose and I would have a coin in my pocket. And if they called me, I'd be, hey, good job. Like, I'm not above you. Like, you should be able to be like, hey, man, I need you to fix it.
Right.
And guys would look up, hey, can I see your sunglasses? No. Well, so that didn't work because they're still in my head. Right.
Right. Right.
But I had my back to the door and apparently Jenny walked in and I'm briefing the slide the way you're not supposed to by looking at it. And I'm like, so you see that, blah, blah, blah. And somebody says something, I turn and smile. And she said, the first thing she ever saw about me were my ears and my smile.
I always said, Greg, like if your comms or radar went out on the boat, you could always stick your big ass ears up there.
They're directional, right? So yeah. I have to know where
you have to be spinning around. Spinning around.
Like radar. Yeah. But I didn't know that had happened. So I come back out when I finish briefing, I'm standing next to my buddy, Justin. And I look over at Jenny and I see her and she's in her khakis and her butt looks great. And I just look at her butt and I look up my buddy Justin. I go, dibs. And that, and he's married, happily married at the time. He's like, oh, come on, man. Just like playing with me.
Yeah.
And we started dating and then got married.
History's
all that, yeah.
History is what it is.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
Your ears.
Your ears. She noticed your ears.
She noticed my ears and my smile.
Directional freaking radars right there. I love it. So you did the Guam thing, met JJ, met your future wife, and then wife.
Yep.
So you came back to 22.
Back to the deuces. Yeah.
That's so, where you met. Is that where you met Overly?
Yeah. So damn, dude. Yeah. That's crazy. So I show up to the team and they're like, hey, you're going to be in Troop 4. You're going to be with this John Overly guy. He's in your master chief. I'm like, yeah, cool. And at the time we had gone from being 2 SOCARs to being a ridge hull inflatable boat, like coastal.
Yeah. Coastal.
And doing the riverine at the same time. So I knew I wanted to be.
It's cutting edge.
I wanted to be riverine because that's my thing.
Right.
But I'd been told I was going to be in rib deck. So John comes off deployment. He comes back. He's walking through the office and operations. And he goes, like, he walks by me and I go, oh, hey man, how you doing? Apparently I'm going to be your rib chief. And he just looks at me and goes, who the fuck told you that? And walks away. I'm like, good talk. Okay. Like awesome.
You got to know John Overly.
Yeah. If you know John Overly, that's 100% John.
That's, but
people look at this and go like, oh, you and John are going to be in the same debt. That's a problem. I'm like, why? Because like, you're the same guy. You're both just manic. And we're actually, he's the only other UCLA fan I've ever met in the Navy.
Yeah, it's true.
So we went to the, was it the Sugar Bowl? What's down in New Orleans? Sugar Bowl, I think.
Sugar Bowl.
We went to the Sugar Bowl twice Neither times UCLA was in it, but we wore full on UCLA gear and we'd show up wearing powder blue when everybody else was wearing like red and black.
Right, right.
Like, yeah. Like,
looking all retarded. Yeah.
Well, it is what it is. But yeah, so I'd gotten his debt and I ended up being he looked at me and he was like, "You have the most Riverine experience in the troop. Why would I make you the rib guy? Like you're going to be my SOCAR guy." And I did a SOCAR, workup and deployment down to South America and then came back, and that's where I met Junior Sailor. I met you.
Yeah. So. No, you're the Junior
Sailor. So who's the real Junior Sailor?
Craig is a Junior Sailor.
I'm Junior to him, but when I first met Heath, there was a thing about Junior Sailor, and we would yell it at each other across the compound.
That, how it came up originally is what Greg had a Peltor, which is an old headset for the Swix. They don't use anymore. They use MCAS now. And he says, yeah, he gave it to Jeremy Gifford, who's a hell of a freaking tech.
One
hell
of the ET. Best ET I've ever met.
But Jeremy had a lot of shit going on. He was getting ready to transfer. He had a lot of stuff going on and he forgot to pass that down. So he called and goes, Heath, this is Greg. Hey, Greg, what's up? He goes, well, I dropped that Peltor off with Jeremy and nobody's fixed it. I'm about to raise hell. I said, nah, Junior Sailor, you ain't going to do a damn thing.
Junior Sailor.
And we got into it. I mean, he was a chief. I was a senior chief at the time. I was like, who's this fucker calling me, telling me he's going to do something to my people? I'm like, yeah, fuck him. But then it became like a friendship.
Yeah.
He came over and we talked. I was like, dude, you're actually a good guy. You're just talking out your ass.
Yeah.
And
it became a term of endearment between both of us where we'd yell Junior Sailor at each other.
Yeah.
And people who didn't know what we were doing would be like, well, who's the Junior Sailor?
Yeah. What's going on? Junior Sailor?
It was just, it was a mind fuck for everybody else. Yeah, basically what it was. Because eventually we're both wearing stars.
Yeah.
And it came to that. But,
they're just handing them out then. It was like Cracker Jack prizes.
That's what it was.
Schumann got them. It's crazy.
Yeah. Everybody gets them. But I got them before. That's all that matters. Yeah. So so you came back. You were Troop 4. Did a successful deployment with John Overly and Troop 4. Real good deployment. You guys killed it.
1,000 kilos of cocaine.
Seized. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Y'all killed
1,050. I have a picture of it. We were looking at it like, damn. Like, we didn't do a whole lot that deployment, but we felt.
But Overly lost like 100 pounds.
So he went keto that deployment and got shredded.
He came back. I was like, God, dang, who the hell are you?
Yeah. I think I remember that.
Yeah, he really got ripped.
Yeah.
Got ripped. And but you come back and a lot of things happened.
Yeah.
But you come back and eventually everybody starts transferring.
Yeah.
And I don't know if this is before your incident. You become Troop 4 SEA.
No, so I was in training as the Riverine trainer.
Right.
And I was training my troop. Like the guys I just left, I trained a troop before them and then I'm training them again. And again, you flush and fill the head shed. So I'm training a chief that I've known for a few years, but I don't know him.
You know?
And then the other debt has another chief that I've known for a while. He just made chief. They're figuring out their life, but they don't have a senior chief. And they were told for a long time, well, one of those two chiefs is going to make senior chief. He's the number one sailor. He's going to be great. He's going to make senior chief. Everything's fine.
But the number one guy didn't make senior chief.
He didn't. The number 2, 3, 4, and 5 made it.
Yeah. You were 4, I think.
I was 4.
Yep. I remember the ranking board. Yeah. You were 4.
I was 4th. And I think Chili was 5th. And Chili made it. Regardless. So a bunch of guys made senior chief. He didn't. And the skipper was like, this is a Friday. We're up at Fort Knox training. I'm training these guys. And he goes, hey, today you're their trainer. Monday, when you get back to the team, you're their SEA. Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, their big final conclusion test is in like 2 weeks.
Because typically in the SWIT community, the SEA is a senior chief.
Yes.
He's in charge of the whole troop.
Yep.
Because you have two debts in the troop. He's the senior enlisted advisor.
Yep. The troop chief.
The troop chief under
a lieutenant.
A lieutenant, but not in y'all's case, but in the best case scenario, you have a lieutenant, you have a warrant officer, and you have the SEA.
Yes.
But y'all didn't have one, I don't think.
We didn't have a warrant. We had a lieutenant, a 24, 26-year-old lieutenant.
Yeah.
He did one pump at a SEAL team, then came to us.
And then something happened. COVID hit.
So COVID hits. So we're doing the training. We are already in our getting ready to deploy phase. And then COVID hits.
And then COVID, so everybody knows, the Navy was shut down. We had a request to go outside 100 miles and all that stuff.
100, 150, something like that.
Yeah, we couldn't just drive on the weekend, do what we did before. We did what we wanted it.
As long as you dropped the chit and went, hey, I'm going here, you were fine. And,
right, but somebody don't do that because he's a senior chief.
Yeah, well, so I'm sitting on it was a Facebook is it Facebook Live, Facebook something, right? So it was like seven people on this call.
Yeah.
A combined, like you have E9, E9, E8, 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 E7, and my brother-in-law are all on a call just talking. So you have like, I don't know, like 150 years of experience.
Yeah.
And my buddy, or my buddy, my brother-in-law lives in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. He was in California for work. And he goes, hey, me and my roommate had a falling out. He's driving back to Atlanta. Can you drive to Atlanta, get all my stuff out of the apartment and bring it back to the house before he gets there? I'm like, yeah, no problem. Like, so I get my nephew, we hop in the 4Runner, we grab a trailer, we drive all the way to Atlanta, get there, go to sleep, wake up the next morning. And I go, oh shit, 150 miles. Like, we're not supposed to be out the front of 100. So I text my lieutenant thinking, oh, this is NSW. We're going to kind of like skirt the gray, you know? Mm-hmm. And I was like, hey, sir, just so you know, like I wasn't supposed to work Monday. This is a Saturday, so I'm fine. I was like, hey.
Atlanta's 5 hours away.
Yeah, 5 hours. It's nothing.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey, just so you know, I had some family stuff come up. You know, I'll see you on work on Tuesday, blah, blah, blah. And he sends me a text that just said three words. Where are you? Fuck. Right. So I can lie or I can tell the truth. So I said, I tried to do both. And I was like, official answer, no more than 150 miles from home. Unofficial answer, I'm in Atlanta.
Which is like 300 miles.
Which is, yeah, which 400 is miles, well outside where I'm supposed to be. And he sent me a text basically like, you're all fucked up. You're putting me in a fucked up spot. Blah, 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 blah. I'm giving you the opportunity to self-report to the command master chief.
Oh.
Well, here's the deal. I'm a 38-year-old senior chief at the time. And you're a 24, 26-year-old lieutenant. Like, yeah, okay, cool. You want to put your big boy pants on? Let's get after it. What I found out later is he expected me to call him and be like, no, wait, sir, let's figure this out. And then he would have seen me Monday and we've talked about it, whatever. I called the ops master chief. I was like, hey man, here's the deal. This is where I am. This is what I'm doing. I'm already on my way home, but want to let you know. He's like, okay, check. So I text the lieutenant back. Hey man, done. So he's like, fuck. So he calls the skipper and goes, hey sir, I think I fired around. I can't take back. And the skipper's like, yeah, man, you did. Cause now I know it's got to go up to the group. It's got to go up. So it went all the way up. I ended up going to DRB, XOI, and MAST. They removed me from the troop. Like I didn't get CSRB of like $100,000 reenlistment because they pulled me out of the troop before I was deployed.
Yeah.
A whole thing. But yeah, I didn't go to MAST, DRB, or XOI until I was a senior chief.
Okay. So I remember when that happened.
Red stripes though, cause that's kind of cool.
Well, no, he has gold. They threw it out. I kept my gold because they threw it out.
Yeah. So I was pissed when I heard that. I was like
Billy Sunday.
Yeah.
I was pissed. Like, Greg, what the fuck? Yeah. Right. So I went to Greg. I said, what happened? And I didn't know the whole story.
Yeah.
I said, Greg, what happened? You told me what happened that you self-reported. I said, first of all, let me tell you something, brother. Chiefs do chief shit.
Yep.
And we don't say anything. Not saying you were right or wrong, but if chiefs do chief shit.
Yep.
And you were like, Heath, I just couldn't lie.
Yeah.
I was like, okay.
Well,
I can't get too mad.
I had a really good friend of mine. He's still in. So it was RD or his initials. But he looked at me and he goes, you know what? I don't mean to sound like a dick, but it's really nice to see a chief get held accountable. Because too often khakis like get away with something. I go, no, here's the deal. I fucked up. Regardless if I forgot or not, it was still a rule. So I stood there on the red carpet with my shield.
You did.
And I just stood behind my shield and was like, look, this is what I did. This is why I did it. You're going to do what you're going to do. Figure it out.
And I'm not going to give the CO's name at the time, but I like the CO.
Yep.
He was a douche, but I respected where he was coming from as a CO.
Yep.
He respected excellence. And I like the back and forth me and him had because he could take it as good as he could get it.
Yeah.
And we have it a lot of back and forth. I think he made the right call on your case.
No, for sure. And he pulled me in his office after and he's like, hey, I really hate taking my senior chief's mask, especially ones I respect as much as you. He's like, all you had to do was ask. And I looked right at him. I went, sir, I forgot. It was like a 3 or 4 day old rule when it happened. Like,
yeah, it was brand new.
It was brand new. I forgot. Like, sorry, but it is what it is. And you have to do what you have to do. And he's like, I'm going to give you a piece of paper that slap on the wrist that, but when I leave,
got a letter of caution?
A nip lock.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Letter of caution. Yeah.
And he goes, as soon as I leave, this goes away and nothing ever happens.
What a nip lock is, it's like a counseling chip for E7 and above.
Yeah. Basically. So I got a counseling shit and then it all went away and it's not on my permanent record or any of that.
I've had a few of them when I was a chief. I used to hang them up in my refrigerator, like his report cards. I've had a few of them.
I believe that.
And it didn't hurt your career. If you wanted to stay in it and pursue master chief, you could have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You had every opportunity because it didn't affect you, your record at all. But I respected that. But that's when I reinforced the junior Seder thing.
Oh, yeah. Because
like, that is what junior Seders do.
100%. Junior Sailor. Come on, you told on yourself? All
right. So, ladies and gentlemen, we got to the bottom of who is really the junior Seder.
Yeah, it's Greg Heidler because he does dumb shit.
I'm 100% the junior Sailor.
But after that, you retired. You went to Ops Master Chief.
Yeah. So I couldn't be a troop chief because I was a bad boy, but I could be the Ops LCPO in charge of all.
We call it the Ops Master Chief because typically it's a Master Chief that holds that position, but Greg held it as a senior chief. Yeah. And you know what? I loved it because that gave me more opportunities to fuck with Greg.
Yeah. You got fired. Well, I actually never got technically fired, but I got fired. Let's say what it is, right? So I got pulled from a troop because I couldn't be a troop chief, but I could be the boss of all the troop chiefs.
Like, yeah. What sense he can't be a troop chief. Yeah. He could be in charge of.
It was
great. So he had his own parking spot.
I did actually.
So I like taking his parking spot.
It's true.
That's true. So when he gets butthurt, who's about my hand? I'm in your parking spot, motherfucker.
The T-House Charger. I knew who it was.
Yeah, you knew who it was. It had Texas plates.
Yep.
It was a Charger. I was the only one that had a car like that with Texas plates. Yep. It was great. And
I like the cup, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Oh, I'm going to talk about this cup in a minute because I want to get into that. Because you have a lot of sayings, and I love the saying you used to use. And I remember using it a couple of times because we would have stuff going on, RAs that you were a big part of as Ops Master Chief and as a troop guy. You never sweated it. You figured it would work out.
It'll work. Eventually, something's going to work out.
So we could do rehearsals and it'd be all jacked up. You would say, fuck it. Let's do it live. Yeah. Like, I don't care how practice goes. It's about game time that matters.
It's not about, it's like Allen Iverson. It's not about practice. I'm talking about practice.
It's about game time. And you were a firm believer in that. And you gave me this cup. I'm going to raise it up. But it's a glass cup. And it's etched with a SWCC rating badge.
Yep.
And you're saying, fuck it. Let's do it live. That's the same. That went true to your rehearsal. Because you didn't care how rehearsal went. Mm. You cared about the game time, the ceremony.
Yep.
And you always believed in the people that was doing working for you or doing a ceremony for you or trying to help RA come together as a command.
Yep.
You always had that mentality of like, I think it'll all come out right at the end. Mm-hmm. And that's what I always loved about you.
And John Overly had a saying that he goes, I don't know how you do it, but you put 10 pounds of shit in a 5-pound bag.
He does.
At the last possible second every time. And it works.
And he said that at your ceremony. And honestly, the love he had for you, even though he's a lot of shit talking in your retirement, that he was your guest speaker, but there was love. Yeah. Undertones of that, because at the end,
for sure,
the dude loved you.
Yeah, you know, just as an actual junior sailor, E6.
That's right. E6 is not a junior sailor. No, but go ahead.
Okay, but I mean, that shows just that's a testament to you as a leader, how much you trusted your people, because we don't see that a lot nowadays in today's Navy.
Yeah.
That leader trusting their people to do the job and do it right and do it, you know, on game time.
So for sure,
that's awesome.
And I honestly, you've probably pissed me off more than probably anybody's ever pissed me off almost, but you know what? That's I love
a feather
you.
Feather in the cap. I'll take that.
No, it's true. It's true. No, because I'm like your polar opposite.
Yeah.
But I appreciate how you always carry business because like you said, you always admire the people you wish you could be like, but you can't be like, and you're one of those guys. And I do admire how you did your career. I admire the way, what you stood for. And I admire how you went off into the sunset, very humbly, if that's a word.
It probably is.
You were humble, and you did it the right way.
I just realized at a certain point, I had a rough probably 18 months where I was just trying to figure out what was going on, but you know, all that. But I realized that when it was time for me to go, I was in a position where I could be like, I'm just leaving, man. Like,
yeah,
what are you going to do? And the CMC at the time was like, oh no, you don't want to leave. No, I'm out. Like, bye. And
yeah,
it's the best decision I ever made. Like, not that I didn't love the Navy, didn't do great things for me, but it was time for me to go. Gracefully bowed out.
You know? And you saved a man's life.
I
want to talk about that because there was I guess he was a GS civilian, former retired 06 captain that worked for NAVO.
Somewhere over there.
He's over there at 22. Yep. I mean, not 22, but at Stennis, one of the commands over there. He was in a bad car accident.
So he was riding a motorcycle, a Mustang stopped in front of him. He hit the Mustang. He didn't fall over. I'd forgot my ID at work, so I had to go back for it. And I looked over and I see this guy on the side of the road. If anybody rides a motorcycle, you know that when you stop, you put your left foot on the ground.
Right.
Well, he had stopped, put his right foot on the ground. I just knew something wasn't right. So I walked up to him and I was like, "Hey, sir, are you okay?" And he's like, "I don't think so." And I could see like water dripping underneath the car. So I ran back, got my little med kit, called 911. I was like, "Hey, is a 50-something-year-old man." He's like, "I'm 60. All right, 60-year-old man. He's been in an accident. I'm pretty sure his foot's broken, pretty sure his leg's broken." And what I realized was that dripping was blood had filled his boot up.
Oh, gosh.
So I was like, "Hey, man, I'm not a medic. I can kind of fix that that bleed, though." And he's like, "Well, I'm on blood thinners." So I threw a tourniquet on him. He ended up, the doctors and everybody ended up saying if I wouldn't have done that, he'd end up passing out and dying. So, and his leg was pinned to the bike. That's why he couldn't put his left leg down.
Yeah.
And, yeah. So.
And you know what? I knew you then. I didn't know you, but I remember when that happened and I was like, man, that dude, it was like luck that you stopped. You just happened to know about bike riding and knew that he put his right foot down instead of his left foot. And you went over there and dropped the tourniquet on him, saved his life.
Yep. Well, so, and like I said to him, like I did what anybody would have done. And he looked at me and he goes, "Well, everybody didn't. 'Cause like 10 or 15 of my friends drove right by going, 'Oh, there's Jeff.' And, but didn't stop because they had somebody. Oh, somebody stopped with him, you know. But had I not stopped, maybe he would have died. Maybe somebody else would have stopped. Whatever. But it played out the way it played out.
And it was the Admiral Ocon at the time. The Admiral he was the weather guy.
Yeah,
he was the base. The most highest ranking officer on the Stennis at the time.
Jeff was his CO when Admiral was a lieutenant.
Yeah.
So they were good friends.
Yeah, and he came over and gave you an award right there in front of the whole command. I mean, he took time. It meant a lot to him.
Gave me a point, gave me a comm, told me how much it meant to him and all that.
So. Yeah. So you're a fucking hero on top of all the things you've done. And you're already a hero when you join the military, but you just solidified it right there.
Just a guy with a job. Yeah.
But you did it, man.
So I appreciate it. I
appreciate your humility.
And the hell out of it. That's what I
said. Yeah. You made it your bitch. Yeah. And then your wife, let's talk about Jen real quick.
Okay.
She's an awesome lady, man.
She is.
Retired senior chief.
Retired senior chief corpsman, was on the first Lioness team back when they started doing that. She was the first female in the 31st New.
What?
She was,
she's coming on the retirement rant. Yep.
She was, she was one of the, why we serve people. Like, she's way cooler than I'll ever be. And then also just knew the instructions, knew what the right answer was all the time. I guess just super. And she's still that way. She's still,
I've only talked to her one time and that's when she called the recruiting station.
Yeah. We would have arguments, but never over like life stuff, only over chief stuff. Like, I think it should have been like this. Well, I think this. And so
it's hard.
Yeah, man. She's awesome.
It's hard because she's a good chief. You're a good chief. And, you know, A-type personalities mesh. It is what it is, but she's a hell of a lady, man. Yep. And
I'm sure she'd love to be on.
And I met her parents. Great. She came from a great,
her parents,
great family. And man, you got it going on.
Yeah.
Trying.
So what are you doing these days?
Going to college, trying to get my, organizational leadership degree. Like I'm in my last 7 weeks, my graduation ceremony is supposed to be August or April 30th, but I didn't go because it would have been like $2,000 to go and have nobody see it.
I'm with
you. So I'm finishing that up. I might start my master's. I might get a job. We'll figure out what's going on.
You like retirement?
Thanks. Yeah, it's awesome. I love it. So
yeah, cool. I'm Ubering.
I'll probably call you up this weekend when I need, a ride.
I don't drive on the weekends, but I'll drive for you.
Well, you know what? I'll call you on a Wednesday. Hammer and tell you to come pick me up.
I'll drive. Gotcha.
There you go.
I'll be there on a Wednesday. I don't know if you
want to
call him on a weekend.
So I'm looking at your career. Give me four people that really helped you decide what you want to do and was a big influence in your career.
In my career, I would say Gargar, John Overly. My uncle Braz is one of the people that I look to, and then I would say either my kids or my brother are the people. Like I do everything I do for my boys, so they're the reason I did any of this. So I would say them for sure.
I believe it, man. You're a good father too.
I do my best.
You do good. We just spent the last almost 2 hours with a hell of American.
Almost 2 hours?
Yes.
I was so enthralled with your stories.
Sorry, I probably talked a lot.
No, good, man. It's good. It was a great story and great experiences that, and I happen to be privy to some of them. And I love to, like I said, the biggest thing I miss in the Navy is probably the camaraderie.
Yeah.
And I miss those conversations and Dino used to have in his office.
For sure. Hiding in Dino's office.
Bullshitting. And yeah, man, thanks for coming out.
I appreciate it.
Joining us today.
Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
And with that,
we'll wish you fair winds
and following seas.